Wednesday. C-26. Ford Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. In the space of no more than 3 hectic minutes, Dan was roused from an unusually sound sleep by the basement's intercom and quickly found himself standing next to Emma while Tara sat on her couch next to none other than Timo Fiore. Emma whispered to him that Timo had just arrived and that she hadn't realized Clark would have to leave for work so early, but Dan agreed that Clark's presence wasn't strictly necessary for this. He wasn't missing anything pleasant, and he would probably thank them for doing it without him. Timo rose enthusiastically to greet Dan, smiling as warmly as he always did upon seeing his good friend, but Tara remained rooted to the couch with the expression of someone who had just thrown up. Given what he assumed Emma had already told her, Dan wouldn't have been surprised if Tara actually had been physically ill. Her face certainly looked far more worried and frightened than it did angry or upset. "So it's true?" she asked, her voice a quivering shadow of itself as she directed the question to Dan. "Everything was a lie?" Dan briefly glanced at Emma, who gave a slight nod to encourage him to talk.
"Everything Walker said was a lie," Dan qualified. "We thought everything we were saying was true, right until the night of the DS-1 explosion, when Ben Gold came to my house and told us it wasn't. A few days later, me and Emma were standing in a spacecraft communicating with the real messengers. Everything Walker ever said was a lie. Kloster did actually write the letter, but his whole story was a lie, and neither the sphere that was found off Argentina or the messages on either of the plaques inside it were real. The message on the 3rd plaque was real, and Emma more or less told the messengers where they could dump it to calm everyone down without revealing that the rest was a lie. That's what I really need you to understand, Tara. The aliens didn't want to expose Walker's hoax. They just wanted to undo its damage. Their big thing is minimal necessary intervention. There's so much to tell you that I don't even know where to start, but we have proof of everything, and later today we'll have irrefutable video proof that their craft flew over Montana last night, exactly where we met them. And I want you to know that we didn't just keep this from you. We kept it from literally everyone. The guy we sent to get the footage last night doesn't even know." Before Tara could ask any questions, Timo excitedly blurted out 2 of his own. "What footage from last night? And who did you send?"
"Dan sent someone he trusts completely," Emma said, stepping in to field this one. "He knew something was going to happen at a specific time, and he wanted someone there to record it. Seconds before the junk satellite entered the atmosphere and burned up, a craft flew across the sky directly above our friend's cameras. He's a professional, and he told us that this footage is incontrovertible."
A barrage of questions then flew at Dan from both Timo and Tara, covering all of the expected topics from how he knew something was going to happen to what the messenger's recent return could mean. Among countless surprising revelations, one which Timo was having particular trouble getting his head around, was the fact that an intelligent race of extraterrestrials had placed an engraved plaque inside a sealed storage locker. Dan quickly re-explained the point that the messengers wanted to share the Salzburg plaque's engraving without invalidating the broader picture, a picture within which an avid collector's storage locker in Austria made at least as much sense as anywhere else. He then promised both Timo and Tara that he would get to all of their questions in due course, but told them that he couldn't cover everything at once. Dan himself was quite surprised by how little Timo seemed to know, but on reflection, he considered that it had made a lot of sense for Emma to tell him as little as she could get away with until they got back to Colorado. A question from Timo about Dan's conversation with the messengers at Lolo led to Dan mentioning the potentially important revelation that humanity already had a name for the messengers' home star, but not yet for their home planet. Timo nodded excitedly at this, hoping it could prove useful in the search for new Kerguelen. At the very least, it ruled out a lot of previously suggested candidate planets. Only Tara asked the big question of why Dan and Emma were so committed to keeping quiet about the hoax in the first place. Indeed, Timo so fully understood the chaos that a reveal would unleash, chaos which would be particularly unpalatable given that it would be balanced by no positive outcomes other than the GSC's immediate demise, that he took it upon himself to answer the question on their behalf.
Tara accepted the nods of agreement that came from Dan and Emma when Timo spoke, already knowing that theirs was an entirely unselfish silence and now understanding the underlying necessity behind it. "The first few days after the leak were more difficult than I thought any days could ever be," Dan said. "But every day since I found out about the hoax has been a million times more difficult than that. Every day for a year I've woken up and part of me has wanted to run outside and scream the truth into the air, just to get it out of my head. It's been like a virus, or maybe a parasite, eating away and eating away and eating away at me, every single day. Emma and Clark would probably tell you the same thing. This secret has torn us apart. A secret like this tears you apart from the inside like nothing else can. But even worse than that, it tears you apart from the other people who know it. If you'd asked me before this who I would have wanted to share a huge secret with, it would have been Emma and Clark, because those were the people I trusted more than anyone else. But now I would probably pick two people who I hate, two assholes like Godfrey and Slater, or someone else like that, because this isn't the kind of thing you want to have in common with people you care about."
"What do you mean?" Tara asked. Her voice was relievingly gentle. She had clearly been floored by Emma's initial revelation, and she was just as clearly sympathetic to the trio's plight, rather than angry at them for keeping such a big secret from her for so long.
"It's hard to explain," Dan said. "My dad doesn't know because there was no reason to tell him, but I don't think about the secret when I look at him or talk to him. My relationship with him is probably pretty close to what it would have been if we hadn't found out about the hoax. Sure, if I'm sitting next to him and a news story about the IDA leak or the messengers or something like that comes on TV, it crosses my mind. But for the last year, every time I've looked at Emma or Clark, it's been the first thought in my mind, because I know they're going through the same turmoil as me. It's not good when every time you look at the people you care about most, you feel something terrible. It's not good when you look at the best people and all you can think about is the worst thing, the terrible thing that no one apart from you and them could ever understand. Sometimes I think it might have been even harder for Clark because he didn't get to meet them, so he only has our second-hand descriptions," Dan went on. "The engravings on the third plaque really do show what they look like, but he doesn't even have the solace of having met them. Honestly, I just would not wish this on anyone. Tara, that's why I lied to you. The night you saw me outside, I'd been at Walker's place because the messengers called me there. That's when they gave me the first sign that told me something was going to happen in a certain place last night. And Timo, I wouldn't have dumped this on you on the plane if there had been any other way, but the messengers are categorically leading me to the fourth plaque, and we might need some serious resources to handle the discovery in a way that makes sense, or maybe even to discover it in the first place." Understandably, neither of them said anything immediately.
"It's a lot to take in," Emma said. "But just imagine sitting in Dan's kitchen a few hours after DS1 exploded, with Ben Gold standing over you and telling you that the truth you worked so hard to spread was actually a hoax all along, that Richard Walker tricked the whole world and played you like a fiddle to help him on his way. That's the most galling part. We did the dirty work, Dan especially. We stood on the front line being ridiculed every day until we exposed enough of Walker's fake evidence to tip the balance. And when the sphere and plaques led to disclosure, he became a hero in everyone's eyes. Just like that. I can't speak for Dan, but I sure as hell feel like a fraud when people stop me on the street and thank me for everything I did to get the truth out. It doesn't matter that I thought it was the truth back then. My inner voice is way too critical to care about any nuance like that."
This tangent led to a good question from Timo about how exactly Richard Walker had been able to trick the team of international scientists who analyzed the supposedly alien sphere in a high-security Argentine compound, which was the one part of the remarkable hoax he still didn't quite grasp. Emma answered in words that were still familiar to Dan as she quoted Ben Gold's answer to their very same question, largely verbatim. "The magic word was context," she said. "Everyone had already decided it was all real because of the way Walker had concocted it all to look like he'd been caught with his pants down. And all the team actually said was that their final findings were, and this is a direct quote, consistent with the notion that the sphere is extraterrestrial in origin. I hate him with every fiber of my being, but in terms of social manipulation and political instinct, I'd say that Richard Walker is one of the smartest people in the world. The story he cooked up with Kloster had all of the limitations built into it. The spheres didn't need any impossible tech or magical alien magnetism, because according to the story, it was the magnetic rings that somehow attracted the spheres out of the water, and those rings were all conveniently lost. To quote Ben, quoting Walker, the story had all the right details in all the wrong places. And that's why it worked.
So where exactly did Ben Gold fit into everything?
Timo asked. Dan fielded this one.
Well, he only found out about the hoax a few days before Walker initiated the leak. He's the guy who dropped the folder I found on the street.
Walker told him that going ahead with this plan was the only way to stop China from taking control of space. Walker hid his motive in plain sight, because that really is what motivated him. He dreamed up the hoax as an emergency stop button in case the Soviets ever got the upper hand, then he finally slammed his fist into the button when China announced their plans.
But that wasn't enough for Ben, Dan continued, so Walker also told him that this was the only way to usher in peace.
I remember Ben telling us that. He said that even though the hoax was horrible, it did usher in unprecedented cooperation, just like Walker promised him. Walker wants to stop the GSC now that he thinks American interests are being eroded, but the messengers will never let him come clean. I don't know if Emma told you this part, but he was abducted when DS-1 exploded, and I think they pretty much warned him that any further attempt to destabilize society would be the last mistake he ever makes. He's really ill anyway. I think he's looking at weeks rather than months.
Take me to him, Timo said.
Emma answered before Dan could. Not a chance in hell, she said.
No good could possibly come of it.
Timo didn't pursue the point, leading to an awkward silence which proceeded to circle the room for several seconds.
So, who did you send to get the footage last night?
Tara asked.
Anyone I might know?
Dan answered with another question. Do you know Blue Dish Network?
I think I heard that name last year,
Tara replied.
Trey Myers? Timo interjected. He was one of the guys who filmed Slater's agents raiding your place, wasn't he? And I seem to recall that Emma sent him some celebratory footage from my observatory on the day they found the sphere, in return for his earlier assistance. A sensible choice, and given his silence so far, it looks like a wise one.
Trey is a real stand-up guy, Dan said. That's why we're not going to tell him any more than we have to. I'm not sure how little we'll get away with. He's going to have a lot of questions. But I don't want to pull him in any deeper than we have to.
Timo nodded. So, Dan, you never did expand on what you said about the messengers leading you to the fourth plaque. First of all, if they can communicate with you, then why don't they just deliver the message directly? Why is a plaque necessary?
Maybe so other people can see it, Dan said. And maybe also because the idea of an alien message coming via a plaque is consistent with what's gone before, which is what they want.
And what precise means are they using to communicate with you?
Timo pushed. He was intrigued rather than dubious, but Emma, reverting to something close to her default position of client protection, had heard enough of the forceful questions.
I think that's enough of an interrogation for now, she said. All of us are all in with this now, so there are no secrets between us, and I can't speak for Dan, but I know that my brain is fried, so we'll get back to that side of things soon, but take a break for now, okay?
Come to my basement, Dan said. Tara, you too. It'll be easier to explain when I can point to the visuals.
Absolutely, Timo said.
And as for how long it will take, are we talking minutes or are we talking all day? What I mean is, should I prepare to be here in Birchwood for a while? My driver is outside.
I think you should stay here until this is all finished, Dan said.
It won't be long, and things are going to start moving quickly. It's easier and safer to be together. You could ask your driver to get some of your stuff from the hotel, and then you can stay in my basement. It's as secure as anywhere.
Timo grinned. Sounds cozy.
It's no lakeside villa, Dan laughed.
Tara then rose to her feet and announced that she was going for a shower to clear her head. She briefly hugged Dan and whispered, Thanks for trying to keep me out of this.
She then hugged Emma for much longer and sobbed out an apology for making her life difficult over the past year, ruefully swearing that she would have been a better sister if she'd known what Emma was living with. Emma whispered some gentle words too quietly for Dan to hear, and Tara wiped her eyes and walked away just a few seconds later. Dan turned to Timo.
Can we have a minute to talk about something? Don't worry, the something isn't you.
Of course, Timo said. He stood awkwardly for a moment. But, I don't know where to go. I've never been in this house before.
Emma pointed to her own bedroom door, and Timo dutifully made his way towards it.
What's up? Emma asked as soon as he was gone.
Dan held his breath for a few heartbeats, as if deciding whether or not to say anything at all, rather than merely choosing the best words. He exhaled sharply.
Okay, there's a world full of confusing stuff going on that's way beyond our control, so I really can't handle being confused about anything else, like what people mean when they say certain things. Last night, Clark said I wasn't paying enough attention when you said I could stay here if I wanted a break from the basement. I thought you were literally just offering me somewhere to sleep, but...
Dan, don't overthink it. Like you said, a lot of things are crazy complicated right now. We'll still be here when they settle down.
So we're not one of the complicated things? I wouldn't think we were if something hadn't happened. But the night before you went to Italy, when I helped you into your...
There's a security camera on the outside of my bedroom door, Emma interrupted. I know what happened. I know what I said. And I know what you said. I know you said no, and that when I asked why, you said because you're wasted, which was pretty accurate. I said I would forget it all unless you reminded me, and I would have forgotten if it wasn't for the camera, but what I don't know is why you didn't remind me. The way I see it, there are three options. Either it was because you're not interested and didn't want to embarrass me, because you knew you were going to dump me in that bad spot with Timo a few hours later, or because you didn't think I meant it.
I didn't think you meant it. Dan said, starting his answer almost before Emma finished suggesting it. I don't know how much you'd had to drink that night, but you were pretty far gone. Clark said you'd been trying to keep up with him for most of the night, and he can't be far off 2.5 times your weight.
Emma was quiet for several seconds.
You know, when you said this secret felt like it was tearing us apart, I know exactly what you meant. Have you ever thought about what might have happened by now if Ben hadn't turned up that night? If we were still, you know... blissfully ignorant about everything?
All the time, Dan said.
And what did that future look like? What did we look like?
Pretty much the same as we look.
I didn't literally mean what we would look like, Dan, Emma said, laughing through the words. I meant, you know...
He tipped his head back slightly in belated understanding.
Oh, to be honest, I didn't think about it in much detail because I always feel like it doesn't make sense to torture yourself by picturing things you can't actually have. It's hard to explain, but it's like I try not to think about what things would be like if my dad hadn't had his accident. You know what I mean? Imagining him walking isn't going to undo what happened, so I don't imagine it.
I totally get that, Emma said. But in this context, when the thing you wanted in the future isn't something that the past has definitively taken away, what makes you think you can't have it?
Well, Ben did turn up that night. The secret did tear us apart. And remember, until the night before you left for Italy, I had zero reason to think there was any chance at all that you were even possibly on the same wavelength.
Tara emerged from the bathroom, covered by at least 2 towels, with a huge one wrapped around her body, and either 1 or 2 smaller ones around her long hair. She was heading towards the kitchen, but stopped when she glanced over and saw that Dan and Emma were still standing while they talked.
Why are you weirdos still standing in the middle of the floor? And where did Timo go?
She asked. Her expression then transformed as she saw the looks on their faces, and she changed course towards them with a grin.
So, what are we talking about here anyway? Anything I might be interested in?
Since when would any of someone else's business not interest you? Emma retorted lightheartedly.
And just so you know, I know what you heard that night. Now go and get dressed. You look like a mummy who's dropped the part that covers its face.
Tara rolled her eyes.
Don't forget, Dan, I still have that list, she said, signaling the length of her arm to playfully reference the metaphorical list of potential girlfriends she'd mentioned several times in the past. Timo, Emma called very loudly. We're ready.
He returned to the living room right away.
Everything okay? He asked.
Yep, Dan said. Good. So there's no disagreement about where to go from here?
Looks that way, Emma said, subtly glancing at Dan. We're on the same wavelength.